Good afternoon. This is Linda Galash, and you're listening to the December 16th, 2011 edition of Catalyst Radio, the weekly public affairs radio program of Community Media Center focusing on local efforts. CMC's Catalyst Radio brings you interviews with organizations and people working on social change, community support, and media issues. And during the month of December, Catalyst Radio is undergoing subtle changes in its format. Among the changes is the allowance for longer interview segments. The format will allow for us to go a bit deeper into local community affairs, and we'll be checking in with our citizen journalism online project, The Rapidian, as well to examine community conversations being discussed there. We will continue our media literacy efforts, looking at state of media and the effects of free speech. You can listen for the fully reformed Catalyst Radio beginning in January 2012. And today we are taking advantage of that longer interview format. Today's Catalyst Radio, we feature Amnesty International, the local Grand Rapids chapter of that, and we talk with James Quatrain, who is the local coordinator. We put on a little bit of information about an effort went on earlier last week. It's called Right for Rights Global Write-a-thon. That last week, as well as Human Rights Day, was this past Saturday, December 10th.
Far between sundown's finish and midnight's broken toll, we ducked inside the doorways, thunder went crashing. As majestic bells of bolts struck shadows in the sounds, seeming to be the chimes of freedom flashing. Flashing for the warriors whose strength is not to fight. Flashing for the refugees on the unarmed road of flight. And for each and every underdog soldier in the night. And we gazed upon the chimes of freedom flashing.
Well, today on Catalyst Radio, we feature the local group of the organization Amnesty International. In the studio with me today is James Quatrain. He is coordinator of the local group. And James, welcome to Catalyst Radio.
Thank you, Linda. Great to be here.
Well, James, a lot of people probably have heard of Amnesty International, but may not know exactly what it's all about and that there's even a local group. So start with telling us, what is Amnesty International?
Well, Amnesty International is the world's largest human rights group. We have over 3.5 million members worldwide. Amnesty USA is the largest country group, and it's headquartered out of New York City. And we focus on fighting for human rights around the world.
Well, let's explore what that means. Human rights, watch human rights issues. Tell a little bit about the target areas, what this really means.
Amnesty uses what I like to call a three-pronged attack, if you will. The first of which is we are a human rights watch group, which means around the world we have a network of people watching for human rights abuses. That is to say, people that are being arrested without trial or for political protests. We're also watching for women and children's rights, refugees, migrant rights, torture, and we are also against the death penalty.
So that's here locally as well as across the world, that's a huge scope. So tell a little bit of what it means to have a local group that focuses on such huge issues.
Well, the way we're set up is that Amnesty is made up of a network of local and student groups. We're a grassroots organization. So each group in every community where there is one operates independently. There's campaigns that come down from the international organization so we can be informed of the different issues and problems and current events around the world, but the group itself gets to focus on where our passions are and what we want to do to try to raise awareness and move people into action.
So Amnesty International has been around a while, and you can tell us exactly how long, but the local group, 50 years, okay, but the local group, fairly new. Talk a little bit about that.
There was a group, a very active group in the mid-90s, mid to late 90s, that just sort of dissolved organically. And so we've been dormant for quite some time. It's about 6 months ago we reactivated a new group. And so we're reaching out to try to get some of those old members that used to participate back, let them know we're here, and then also reach out to any new members that want to join and help us.
So forming this new group here locally about 6 months ago, tell a little bit about how that came about, how you pulled people together, and some of the focuses here in Grand Rapids.
Well, we've utilized social media a lot. My wife, Shelley, and I actually decided about March to start the group officially, and we got a lot of support from Amnesty Midwest office, which is out of Chicago. We attended the annual general meeting in San Francisco back in March and got a lot of information about the way the organization is set up and a lot of tips on how to go about setting up the group. Once we got back from that, we officially filed the paperwork and did all that kind of fun stuff. And through largely Facebook, and there's some information that we got from Midwest as far as addresses of past members. And it's just been a process of just trying to get the word out. And we found that once people hear about it, we've been growing. There's been new members coming every month, and we're starting to get some traction.
You mentioned that you and your wife were sort of the instigators to getting this rolling again here locally. What are your passions, you and your wife, or you specifically, and what are you putting your focuses towards?
Well, I'm a history junkie, and I enjoy politics and things of that nature. And one thing that Amnesty provides is a definite connection to current events and a real-time response to things that are going on right now, and an ability to have an effect, a positive effect on real-time events and things that are going on. I mean, the Arab Spring is obviously the first one that pops to mind as a current crisis, if you will, where human rights organizations are definitely involved in monitoring and making sure that the rights of individuals are protected.
Arab Spring, you brought up. What are some of the other hot areas right now that are really on the forefront of things going on as far as Human Rights Watch type events?
Women's rights are huge. Last year, Amnesty International published a maternal mortality report. Every 90 seconds, a woman around the world dies needlessly in childbirth. And it's mainly due just to lack of adequate health care. And one other interesting fact is that of all the places in the United States, more women die in the Detroit area needlessly due to lack of health care than anywhere else in the U.S. So they actually had a panel discussion over in the Detroit area last October where they talked about some of the issues with health care, and we're working within the legislature to try to bring some funding and more attention to making sure there's adequate health care for pregnant women.
So Michigan is kind of known throughout the country right now as going through difficult times, and then our largest city hits the news in that sort of way. What are some next steps to deal with some of these figures coming out of Detroit?
Well, unfortunately, Detroit's got a lot of issues. There's definitely some good things happening over there from what I've seen. And maternal mortality, you know, is part of a larger issue of nutrition and access to quality food in the Detroit area and a number of other things, not only in Detroit, but in all urban areas. So there's been a lot of focus over there on community gardens and in the Detroit proper area. There is no what we would call a broadline grocery store in all of Detroit. So, I mean, that's part of, you know, obviously you can't have healthy pregnant women without access to quality nutrition and healthcare and things like that.
And with transportation, all kinds of other issues being a part of it, if there's not a neighborhood grocery store and folks are left to deal with maybe convenience stores, liquor stores, as far as that, to get their food, that brings it right back home.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
So with Amnesty International really being a watch group, is there any action steps when we think of some of these sorts of things?
Sure. One of the most effective ways that real people can do and what we do as a group is writing letters. I mean, it sounds kind of trivial to most of us because, you know, in our society, we don't really, you know, put the value on letters that maybe they do in a lot of other countries. But, you know, writing letters makes a huge difference. Writing letters to our legislators, writing letters to other governments, writing letters to individuals that may be being held to let them know there's someone out there that cares about them. I mean, these really do make a real life impact and a powerful impact on the process.
And in fact, one of your recent events here locally was a write-a-thon. That was that last week on the 6th of December?
Yes.
Tell a little bit about what this write-a-thon was doing and the participation and what came out of it.
Okay, the Global Write-a-thon is the world's largest letter writing event. It's put on by Amnesty International every year during the first week of December, which is Human Rights Week. And the goal is to try to get as many people to write letters on behalf of human rights abuses as we can. So every year, Amnesty will highlight a number of cases. This year there was 15, and they're in numerous countries. There was one in Iran, Mexico. Each case varies. Some of them are journalists that are being held. Some of them are political protesters that were rounded up and are being held without trial. And Amnesty provides all the information, vets the case to make sure that the person who's being held is legitimate. And then we asked as many people as we could to stop by the write-a-thon, which was Tuesday night at Mangiamo on Lake Drive. And we had copies of each case so you could sit and read each one. And then we had sample letters that had all the desired information that the people could sign if they just wanted to sign something that we could mail, or they could sit and write their own letter based on the information that we provided, and then we'd mail that for them too. Obviously, handwritten letters are more impactful.
But, if you can read them, it wouldn't be a good idea
Me neither. But, you know, what a lot of people did is you could sit and write one or two and then sign the rest. I mean, 15 cases, a lot of cases. And, you know, it was great. You know, the staff at Mangiamo did a fantastic job. We were in their wine room in the basement, which is beautiful. We had pizza and a really good time was had by all. You could be in and out of there in 5 minutes or stay for 2 hours. It was great.
I bet the letters got a little more colorful as that time went on.
Yeah.
So let me get this straight. There's 15 cases that you were focusing on. Is that locally or?
No, these are all internationally.
So that's really targeted if you get right down to 15 cases only.
Yes.
Where here locally, how many people were involved in this write-a-thon?
We had about 40 people attend. We generated 500 letters, which...
So more than 10 a piece. That's quite the effort. So everybody sits down, writes or prints out their letters. Then here locally, you sent those 500 letters to the national...
Whichever authoritative body we think has the most impact on that person.
Okay.
You know, sometimes the letters are pertaining to a broader issue, maternal health care, in which case those letters may be addressed to a congressman who's in charge of the committee that is, you know, responsible for funding that act, or the president of the country of, say, Myanmar, or whatever we think would have the most impact as far as getting pressure.
Sure.
One interesting thing about the write-a-thon and writing letters in general is we tend to think, you know, especially, say, an isolated government like a Myanmar, they may not really care what the government of the United States thinks, but they do care about their image in the world. And so what these letters do is lets them know that real people are watching them and care. And when those letters come from around the world where they can't just point the finger at one particular government, it really does have an impact on their decisions. They do care about what, especially, I mean, not to generalize, but a lot of these dictators are megalomaniacs. I mean, they really care about their image. It's very, and they're surrounded by people that tell them what they want to hear. So if you can crack through that sort of guard, you can change their mind.
So that exposure of what they're doing and that it's known across the world really does have an effect?
Absolutely.
I take it you were at that letter writing campaign.
Yes.
Can you highlight maybe some of the particular cases, maybe some of them that you wrote letters for that were among those 15 that were part of the write-a-thon?
There was a couple cases in Mexico that were journalists being held for writing articles critical of the government. There was some other journalists in Iran.
And the journalist situation is something that's a pretty big focus for Amnesty International, from what I've read in the past.
Yes. Yeah. I mean, journalists are in a lot of these countries some of the bravest people we have out there. I was at when we were in San Francisco for the annual general meeting, I was at a panel where they had four different journalists telling their stories, one of which was from Mexico. She was arrested. She was writing an expose on child slavery and sexual assaults and was arrested for that because of it was connected to organized crime, which, of course, was connected on a lot of levels to the government. She was arrested, held, essentially tortured to try to get her to stop. There was another journalist who was she was Canadian Iranian citizenship, and she went to Iran just to write a book about it wasn't even designed to be critical. It was just about life in Iran, and they arrested her and held her for like 6 months. And when they arrest people, they don't tell their families that they're being held. They don't have any contact.
So a lot of times these journalists just disappear.
They just disappear.
And some maybe have actually been killed.
Yes. And part of the write-a-thon or any urgent action letter campaign that we do is targeted to that government saying, hey, we know that, you know, here's a journalist that's missing. You know, we know where they are. We're watching you. Either try or release them.
And just to remind listeners, today we are talking with James Quatrine here on Catalyst Radio, 88.1 FM, WYNCE. James Quatrine, coordinator with Amnesty International Group, Grand Rapids. Do you have any success stories that you can tell out of some of the efforts of Amnesty International, such as these letter-writing campaigns that target some cases?
Well, the classic best, most recent example, and I'm going to butcher her name because I always do, is the ex-president of Miramar, Aung San Suu Kyi, who was a subject of several write-a-thon campaigns. And she was under house arrest for, gosh, I want to say 4 years.
Is this the woman that was on an isle, kept in some sort of exile for a while?
Yep. Okay. Yeah, and she was actually released once and then rearrested. She was voted in as president of Miramar and then arrested again. And she is released now. And actually, she met with Secretary of State Clinton, I believe it was last month, when the secretary went to Miramar for the first time in a long time, if ever.
So the letter writing campaign is definitely a focus of what is Human Rights Week. Is that what
yes.
this past? Tell a little bit more of what Amnesty International's Human Rights Week is beyond the letter writing campaign.
Well, like a lot of what Amnesty does, I mean, we're a watch group, but our second tier is about awareness, and our main goal, I think, is spreading of awareness. So Human Rights Week is a great opportunity for us to make people aware of the many human rights issues around the world. And it's also corresponds with the founding of our organization, which is 50 years ago, by a man named Peter Bedinson, who is British. And the story goes, he was sitting in a cafe reading a newspaper story about a group of students in Ireland, I want to say, I could be wrong on that one, who were arrested for toasting, for having a toast to freedom. They raised their glasses in a toast to freedom and were arrested for it.
That does sound like Ireland.
Yeah. And he read this story and he was so outraged that he began campaigning for as many people as he could to write letters on their behalf. And he's the one that coined a phrase that we use a lot. It's called prisoners of conscience. And he sort of started the process of putting pressure on governments to release these prisoners via letter writing.
Okay. Well, human rights abuses come in lots of forms beyond being jailed. And I think you had mentioned a little bit about food and water issues. Can you talk a little bit on that topic?
Sure. Well, we believe that food and access to real food and clean water is a human right. And there are, I want to say, close to a billion people in the world that do not have access to clean drinking water. I think the average American would be shocked to learn how many people, especially women, have to walk literally hours a day in order to get drinking water to bring back to their family. So, and we consider that a basic human right. So we partner with a lot of other nonprofits, and here in Grand Rapids, one that we've been working with is Food and Water Watch Grand Rapids, and we've sort of established a nice partnership with them, and they are working on several issues like the funding for the Fair Farm Act and addressing things like fracking. And so we kind of work in conjunction with them and try to support them, and they've supported us a lot too.
So you did mention fracking, and that kind of comes to the environmental types of issues. How much of the things you see as human rights threats come from deterioration of the environment? We were just talking about some of the food and water, mm-hmm. but just the beyond that.
Well, this is speaking for myself personally. Amnesty doesn't have, at least to my knowledge, an official environmental policy. I'm sure that if you pulled, 100 Amnesty members, they would all agree that, our environment is definitely, at a crisis state, and that we as a culture need to start looking at our food and our water system and try to fix it.
Amnesty International has enjoyed the attention from a lot of celebrities. You had mentioned this to me before we actually went on air, but I wanted you to expand a little bit on that, the celebrity support that the organization has, how it kind of harnesses that and uses it for some of these purposes.
Sure. We are the rock stars of the nonprofit world here at Amnesty International. We have a lot of celebrity support, and it's fantastic. And one of the things that we do to help increase awareness and drive membership is we're privileged to have the opportunity to have tables at many concert tours. We've got relationships with a lot of bands. Just recently, we had a table at the Indigo Girls there at the Orbit Room. We had a table at Mellencamp at DeVos. Also, Steve Earle at the Intersection, and U2 in East Lansing.
So all of that somewhat local. What do you find when you meet up with some of the audience that come to some of these shows? I mean, do you get a lot of attention? Do you
it depends
headway?
On the show. it's funny, as you're sitting at a table outside of those places, you can tell almost immediately as someone walks by if they're interested in Amnesty, or if they want to find out information by how they engage with us versus those people where it's a question of how far they can get away from us when they walk by. And again, we're not trying to to wreck anybody's concert time, but we're just glad that these musicians give us the opportunity to hand out some information. A lot of times what we'll do at the concerts is we'll have a list of petitions. And it's similar to the write-a-thon, where the concert tour works in conjunction with Amnesty to choose from a list of individuals at risk or prisoners of conscience or however you want to describe them. And we'll have I won't say they're legal petitions, but they're sort of abbreviated letters where, we'll have an outline of the person's story, and we'll try to get as many signatures as we can, and those get mailed to the same government officials or whoever we think will have the most impact on. So that's actually our goal, again, spreading awareness to the concert goers, and then also, trying to look for people that might want to get more involved and talk about what Amnesty does.
As we get close to the end, I'm just struck by a number of the things you said having to do with media and free speech and the gamut of it. Handwriting letters all the way to using social media to get the word out. I mean, this is a broad spectrum of ways of handling some of these issues. I'm just wondering, as you look on the horizon or as you're looking ahead, what are some of the things that you see being the target of Amnesty International attention? What is kind of bubbling up in the world right now?
Wow. Well, it's sad to say there's a lot of human rights issues happening right now around the world. Torture is definitely a big issue for us. There is, in January, I want to say it's the 11th. There's going to be a human chain in Washington, D.C. in support of closing Guantanamo. But we're very disappointed as an organization that not more has been done to shut that down. You've got right now and going forward, Syria is a huge issue. There are atrocities going on in Syria every day, and we're working hard to shine a light on that. Definitely the Arab Spring. I mean, it's been a triumph. It's still a triumph of political rights, but there are still tons of human rights abuses going on in even those countries that we celebrate to this day. And, you know, a country like Bahrain, which is our ally, their government is arresting their people for political protest constantly, and they're enjoying support of the U.S. government to do it. So, unfortunately, the list goes on, and we are, as an organization, find ourselves reacting a lot to these current events, which can be a challenge because you have these overriding issues that we've been working on for years and years and years, and then something comes out of left field, and we feel that we need to respond to that too, and that can drive some of our energy away from that. We press on.
So, James, with some of these issues that might be of interest to somebody here locally, what's the best way to make contact? You don't have an office, I believe, but Facebook and other social media?
Our email address is amnestygrandrapids@gmail.com. You can email, and we will be happy to put you on our core mailing list, which is for people that really want to engage. If you want to just, you can also let us know if you just want to be aware of some of our events. We can put you on the general email list. That's great too. We've been meeting on the first Monday of every month at Common Ground Coffee House, which is on Fulton, on the east side of GR, Common Ground Coffee House, at 7 p.m. on Mondays. And then we also have our Facebook page, which is Amnesty International Grand Rapids Local Group. You can like us there, and we'll be happy to update that as often as we can. And then also you can go to amnestyusa.org and put in your zip code, and they will give you our email address from there too. So there's lots of ways to contact us.
James Quatrine, Local Group Coordinator with Amnesty International Grand Rapids. Thanks for joining us today.
Oh, thanks for having me. Appreciate it.
Starry-eyed and laughing as I recall when we were caught, trapped by no track of ours, for they hang suspended. As we listened one last time and we watched with one last look, spellbound and swallowed till the tolling ended. Tolling for the aching whose wounds cannot be nursed, for the countless confused accused misused, strung out ones and worse, and for every hung up person in the whole wide universe. And we gazed upon the chimes of freedom flashing.
Music featured this week on Catalyst Radio is Bob Dylan's song, Chimes of Freedom. This song is actually the title song of a new disc being released as a fundraiser for Amnesty International, featuring dozens of artists covering Bob Dylan songs. You have been listening to Catalyst Radio, your local public affairs radio program focusing on media issues and community efforts. We broadcast weekly. It's Fridays, noon to 12:30 p.m. on Community Media Center's radio station, WYNCE. Archives of Catalyst Radio shows can be found on our website at grcmc.org/catalystradio, as well as at therapidian.org. You can also go to grcmc.org to learn about all the different programs and opportunities offered here at Grand Rapids Community Media Center. With audio editing support from Matt Gerrals, I'm Linda Galash, and this is 88.1 FM WYCE, Wyoming, Grand Rapids.